comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen. In our radio audience, we are awaiting the television audience to join us. They are not synced up tonight, and that is because I've been doing some work on the two computers, and the time is off between them. But they'll be joining us here in just a few seconds, and I will greet us all again. Stand by for the television audience. Here we go. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. And it's the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. In our members area, you know, we've the past couple of weekends had special broadcasts. We've got another one coming up. Now, it's not going to be on this weekend, but I just want to tell you it's coming up because what we have found, and it's good, is a seminar being led by Sir Lawrence Gardner. The late Sir Lawrence Gardner, and it's absolutely fascinating. It's almost 2 hours long, and we're getting it ready, getting it sort of, we're processing it so it's sort of cleaned up and easier on the eye. It's not a real good copy, but it will be by the time you see it, and that's coming up. So if you're not a member, you want to be sure that you go ahead and join our members area, because in our members area, we have all kinds of goodies, and that's one of them. One of the goodies is that we have special broadcasts, and this one's coming up, so this is a good time to go ahead and join. Some of you, when we had the computer meltdown, made donations. And you remember I said we're going to give you DVDs, some DVDs as thank you gifts. Well, we are, and we have. Most of you have received them, but there was a small batch that haven't received them yet. And the reason you haven't received them is because the DVDs that we actually burned those on were defective. And I got one returned to me before we got the rest of them mailed out. And we checked them, and they are about 3 out of 5 were defective. So we had to get some more DVDs and burn them. Okay, we don't have a mass production shop for that, so it took some time to do that. But anyway, it's done, and those of you who have not yet received your DVDs will be receiving them this week. Now, the K-Files. If you are not subscribed to the K-Files, you really need to go ahead and subscribe to that. It's free. It's our weekly newsletter, and there's no reason for you not to be getting it. So go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. You see a big link right in the middle of the page, and it says K-Files. Now, if you click that, put your email address in there, and submit, you're going to get a confirmation email. It has a link in it that you have to click. Or maybe copy and paste into your browser to activate your subscription. That's it. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Be sure you do that tonight if you haven't done it. We'll be back right after this. And And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Tonight, we are going to be looking at something from a little bit different and a little bit deeper angle than we've looked at it before. Now, we have, in fact, dealt with part of the subject matter that I'm going to deal with here tonight, but not exactly in the way that I'm going to deal with it here tonight. One of the big theories that's out there, and there are various versions of the theory, is that there were ancient astronauts, aliens, who visited Earth, and they, in some of the versions of the story, did genetic engineering and created what we call the human race. Other variations of that do not claim that they created the human race, but do claim that they were here and interacted with us. Out there in academia, and I'm pretty hard on some academics, not all, but some academics, you know, who are really stuck in a box, and anything outside that box can't even be considered. And that has brought so much harm and hurt and even death to this planet. Sometimes those academics are affiliated with organized religion. Sometimes those academics have been affiliated only with universities, with alleged science. But I'm tough on those. But there are a lot of academics who are not like that and who do have their minds open. Nevertheless, they have what we would call a mainstream view of very anomalous appearing evidence. And so the way it works is they present what they say is their theory based on scientific evidence. Well, you've heard me say there was a time when the top theory based on alleged scientific evidence was that the Earth was flat. And there was a time when the prevailing theory based on alleged scientific evidence was that the Earth was the center of everything and all of the heavens rotated or orbited around the Earth, including the sun. And, of course, we know all of those things are untrue. Today, we know they're untrue, but there was a time when that was the prevailing theory. Now, when someone comes along and looks at all of the same evidence but comes up with a completely different theory that's outside of the majority opinion, they are referred to in the religious world as being heretics. And a heretic simply means someone who doesn't have our opinion. In the scientific community, they sometimes use that word, or the academic community, they sometimes use that word. They sometimes use the word renegade. They sometimes use the word fringe. This is, it's a fringe theory, you know, and it has not much credibility. Well, you know, who's assigning credibility here? Today, Galileo has a great deal more credibility than the Pope at that time. But at that time, the Pope had more credibility, and Galileo was considered a heretic. So these sorts of labels really are not useful at all. And I think, you know, when we talk about this alien astronaut, alien or ancient alien, ancient astronaut theory, I think we can safely call it an alternative theory But I don't think it's right to call it heresy. From a religious point of view, it may be. But it, you know, it's outside of the mainstream religious views. It's not heretical. It's not fringe. And to say it doesn't have much credibility is useless, because who's assigning credibility? The same people who have decided that you're outside of their circle. You see? It is an alternative theory, and we're going to look at a possibility tonight. And I want you to understand that what I'm going to present to you tonight is just that. It's a possibility. We're going to look at some evidence for which mainstream has no good explanation. In fact, mainstream doesn't even have all of the facts about the characters involved here. And so they've come up with a story, and they have blessed it and baptized it and said that's the way it is. What I am saying is that story is just a theory, just like the alien astronaut theory. It's just a theory, and it's based on incomplete data, as is what I'm going to present to you tonight. But the question that we start with tonight is there any evidence that extraterrestrials have been to this planet, actually interacted with humans in some way or another, and in any way, is there evidence that they in any way attempted to set up their rule on this planet? Now, before we go any further, let me explain the concept of their rule. To some people, that would mean domination, that would mean loss of freedom, and they view it as something evil. Well, certainly if these aliens were evil aliens, that's how it would be. If these aliens, on the other hand, were trying to set up something where they were sort of guiding things away from what they considered to be bad for mankind, and they were trying to guide us away from it, they're kind of setting up their rule. They're kind of setting up their way of doing things, but not in terms of loss of freedom for humans, not in terms of domination of humans. So, you know, good aliens, if that's who was doing this, would be generating something entirely different from what the bad aliens would be generating. We understand? And I'm not making the call one way or the other on that. But we're going to look at a particular period of history. We're going to look at a particular person. In fact, several persons who are all related. We're going to look at a particular person at a particular point in history and just ask some of the questions related to this ancient alien theory. Now, the person that we're going to be taking a look at is a person that most of you know as Akhenaten. Akhenaten had a real name. Akhenaten that's not the name that his mom and dad gave him. The name that his mom and dad gave him was Amenhotep IV, Amenhotep. And his father was Amenhotep III. He was Pharaoh of Egypt. Akhenaten, after he became Pharaoh, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm going to jump right back. But after he became Pharaoh, 4 years after he became Pharaoh, he changed his name. And he changed it from Amenhotep to Akhenaten. Aten is the Egyptian word at that time for what we call the sun disk. In other words, you look up in the sky, you see this big, burning, bright object up there that looks like a burning disk. That is the Aten. That's Aten. Okay? It is a symbol of all the energy of the universe. Akhenaten means the living spirit of Aten. That's what it means. Now, Akhenaten was a very peculiar individual. Akhenaten was a game changer here. Egypt had been around for a long time by the time Akhenaten was born. There had been a lot of pharaohs. There'd been a lot of ups and downs, but mostly ups. And by the time he was born, Egypt was the superpower on the planet at that time. There were some others that were other groups that were beginning to flex their muscles, particularly the Hittites were beginning to flex their muscles at that time. But Egypt was the superpower on the planet. They were rich. Compared to the rest of the world, the people in Egypt had a very high standard of living. Art, music, religion, literature, it was at a very, very cultured high level by the time Akhenaten or Amenhotep IV was born. Well, his dad died. But before his dad died, I mean, here, his dad is Amenhotep III. This is Amenhotep IV. Named after Papa, you would sort of figure this would be perhaps kind of the favored child, right? Amenhotep III his queen was Queen Ti. You're going to see their pictures in a moment, those of you who are watching our TV channel. Queen Ti and Amenhotep III produced quite a family. They had, I think, four daughters and two or three sons. Amenhotep IV was one of those. Each of these children at one time or another shows up in some of the artwork or in some of the statuary. There are statues, for instance, of Amenhotep III with Queen Ti and one of the daughters. So in the statuary, the children show up in the inscriptions on the walls. The children show up except for Amenhotep IV. The other sons received high titles. And the daughters, of course, high titles, princess and so forth. Amenhotep IV, there's no record that he ever received any high title. It's as though mom and dad, or at least one of them, maybe just dad, shoved him aside for some reason. He grew up outside the circle. There was something about him that just sort of made him an outsider. Something about him that dad or mom, but as I say, I think it was dad, just didn't like. And you're going to see in a moment what I think that is. He's outside the circle. From birth, this one is sort of a heretic. From birth, this one is fringe. He doesn't get to partake in all the high titles and the pomp and the circumstance. And yeah, he's raised in the palace. Yeah, he is a prince of Egypt. But he's not recognized along with the other children by mom and dad, not officially. I mean, he's recognized as being their son, but he doesn't get any of the goodies. Other than he gets to live in the palace, he gets to go to school, he learns to read and write, He's familiar with all of the religion and all the religious writings of Egypt. Now, we know that because later in life, he, in some of his writings, states that he's very familiar with the religious writings at the temples at Thebes. So here he is, sort of a castaway. He's a castaway child. They didn't kick him out of the palace and make him go live on the streets, but he's shoved to the side. It's kind of like he's kept out of public view. And one wonders why. But the day comes when he is the Pharaoh. The day comes when it's Amenhotep the IV who is the Pharaoh. It's not his brothers. And look, Amenhotep the III, like all of the pharaohs of Egypt, had several wives. Now, he had one royal queen. That's the number one. Her name was Queen Ti. That was Amenhotep's mother. But there were other wives, and they truly were wives, not just concubines. And he had other children with them. And if they didn't like Amenhotep, and they didn't like the brothers, that were born to Queen Ti, they could have chosen any of these other royal princes to be the Pharaoh of Egypt. They didn't do it. Amenhotep was chosen. Kind of odd, isn't it? Here he has spent a life in obscurity. Here he spent a life sort of shoved to the side. Kind of a Cinderella story, you know? She gets to live in the house, but all the goodies go to the stepsisters. Well, he gets to live in the palace, but all the goodies are going to the other kids. So he's in the shadows. He's pushed to the side. How does that kid get to be the Pharaoh? The answer to that may surprise you. The answer to that is very much down to earth. It may surprise you. But I'm going to tell you what the prevailing theory is on that and show you the pictures if you're watching on our TV channel. I'll describe them for those of you on the radio. And you'll see exactly why the theory exists. How this kid, the ostracized one, the one cut out of all of the high titles, how did this kid rise to the throne of the superpower on the planet at that time? Ponder it. How do you think it happened? We'll be back right after this. You're listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking about this alien astronaut theory and the possibility of ancient astronauts coming from some other world to this one and interacting with us. Is there evidence that could suggest that? So we're asking about Amenhotep IV. How did this kid get to be the Pharaoh? How did he get to be the king of the superpower on the planet? Well, now the theory is it's because of his dad's very bad dental condition. Those who are watching on television, on our channel, you're seeing a picture of Amenhotep III's mummy, the head. And you can see he's got horrible dental condition. It's not just because that's very, very old. When they examined his teeth, all of his teeth were just rotten. And so the theory is that Amenhotep III, in the latter year or maybe 2 years of his life, was in so much pain that he was likely anesthetized most of the time, either with alcohol or some opium or opium derivative. That's a theory. It is just a theory. But the theory goes like this. Amenhotep III didn't like this kid. Even though he's named Amenhotep, the kid is, named after dad, Amenhotep III doesn't like this kid, and we'll see why, I think, in just a moment, that was the case. But Queen Tee, now her picture is up as well, and Queen Tee, of course, she's mom, right? So Amenhotep III is pretty much out of the loop here. Egypt has several periods of time where they were ruled by women. The most famous, of course, I guess, in popular culture today is Cleopatra. But they had several periods of time where they were ruled by women, and there are several periods of time where the queen is as strong or stronger than the pharaoh in the waning years of his life. And so what they are theorizing is that mom, you know, she feels sorry for little Amenhotep IV because he's been pushed aside all these years. Dad has given gifts and showered gifts and titles and position on all the other kids, but not this one. And so she goes to bat as the royal queen for her son, Amenhotep IV. She's going to make sure he gets his slice of the pie, even if dad really didn't want that. Now, why wouldn't dad want that? Well, anyway, that's the theory as to how he gets to be pharaoh. Mom is behind it. She's powerful, and we know that. We know she was very powerful. And combine her personal power and popularity with the people, combine that with dad is in really bad health, bad shape, and maybe anesthetized most of the time and not really on top of his game here. And so mom is able to do all the maneuvering to get Amenhotep IV to the throne. Now, that's a theory, but there is some evidence for it, as those who are watching can see. Dad's dental work here is atrocious. So maybe that's the case. So why did Amenhotep III not like Amenhotep IV, his son, named after him? Why didn't he like him? Well, let's start out with taking a look at Amenhotep IV. Later changed his name to Akhenaten. Those who are watching are seeing three pictures of the same individual. Now, actually, two of these pictures, it's the same statue. On the left, we see a bust shot of Amenhotep IV, or Akhenaten. In the middle, we see a side shot of a statue of Akhenaten. And then on the right, we see a statue of Akhenaten facing us. And what we're immediately struck with is when you look at his face in the picture on the left, because we just see the bust shot, you look at his face, he's got a very elongated, angular, handsome face. But when we look at all of Amenhotep, we see that he's a blimp. And in fact, when we look at this picture where he's facing us, we can see that he's got very feminine features. If we did a close-up on this, you would see, and if you get real close to your screen, you can see, he's got breasts like a female. He's got the curves and the hips like a female. But he's definitely a male. And we know that because he fathered children. And one of the children he fathered, which has now been connected up with DNA, was King Tut. So it's not a question of did he father children. He did father children. One of them has been proven to be his son, and that was Tutankhamun. All right, now I want you to take a look at something, those who are watching. This is a comparison of Akhenaten with his father and mother. There's absolutely no resemblance between him and his parents. There may be just a tiny hint of resemblance with his mother. And what we're looking at is we're looking at a sculpture of Amenhotep III, and then next to that, to the right of that, is a photograph of his skull that we were talking about. Underneath that, we have a carving or sculpture of Queen Tee, and then next to her, on the right, is her mummy. And her mummy looks very much like the sculpture. We can't tell much about Amenhotep III, how accurate that is, because his mummy was in such a state of decay. I mean, it was just almost destroyed. And so really what you're looking at is a skull. But with Queen Tee, we can see that she looked very much like the sculpture. Now, Amenhotep the IV, Akhenaten, look at his face and look at his dad. When you compare the two, dad has a sort of rounded, very Egyptian face. Amenhotep the IV doesn't look like him. Not at all. Do you think maybe Amenhotep the III had some suspicions? You think maybe, as he's watching this kid grow up, he's looking at him and saying, you know what, that does not look like my kid. He doesn't act like my kid. He doesn't move like my kid. He doesn't think like my kid. Well, we're not going to do any family embarrassment here, but that kid's getting nothing. You think it could have gone like that? That is a theory. It is a theory that's out there. I didn't make it up. It's one I've read. It's one I've seen in a documentary. That theory's out there. That perhaps Amenhotep III, Pharaoh of Egypt, looks at this kid and says, I'm not going to embarrass the queen and embarrass the royal family, but that's not my kid. I mean, they don't look anything at all alike. They don't even look like they're in the same family. That's not all that's weird here. Amenhotep the IV becomes Pharaoh. And he does all the things pharaohs do. I mean, there he is with his very feminine body, always shoved to the side. The public knows he exists, but they don't know much about him. Brother, he's the high priest down at Thebes. He got the big title of being the high priest down there. They know all about that guy, but this one they don't know anything about, really, and he becomes Pharaoh. So when he becomes Pharaoh, he does all the things the pharaohs do. Granted, he looks very strange to these people. I'm going to show you how strange in just a minute. But I've already described for you, and our viewers have already seen, his body shape is very strange for a man. There he is. He's the pharaoh. And a pharaoh of Egypt is pretty much an absolute ruler. So he goes to Thebes, and he does what all the pharaohs do. He honors the gods at Thebes. His name, Amenhotep, has something to do with serving Amun, the god Amun. So he goes to Thebes, and all of the previous pharaohs add some addition onto the big temple down there and big engravings and carvings and so forth. He goes down there, and all of their additions honor the various gods. He goes down there, adds his addition to the temple at Thebes, and only honors one god, which he says is Aten. Now, to you and to me, that may not be a big deal, right? We're used to, here in the United States of America, we're used to a president always ending his speeches with, "And God bless America." What if the president were to stand, any president, were to stand in front of the cameras and say, "Yeah, there is no God"? Now, look, that would shake up a lot of Americans. Even people who never go to church, they'd say, "Whoa, what's the matter with this guy? He's supposed to say, and God bless America." Well, it shook up Egypt. It shook up people in Egypt, all over Egypt, when he didn't honor any of their gods and built this addition to the temple that honors only one god, whom he says is named Aten. That was the first of the rumblings. He goes back to the capital. In the fourth year, just 4 years into his reign, here in the United States, presidents are president for 4 years, then they have to run for re-election. 4 years into his reign, he changed his name. And he changed his name to Akhenaten. He was no longer Amenhotep IV. He is now to be known as Akhenaten. That would be equivalent to the president. Our current president is Barack Obama. We'll use him as the example. It would be equivalent to Barack Obama winning re-election and then stepping in front of the microphones and saying, "Look, from now on, do not call me Barack Obama. Call me Steve." What do you think people would think all across this world if he did that? They would think he's beginning to crack up a little bit, wouldn't they? "Yeah, well, I don't want to be called Barack Obama. I want to be called Steve. Call me Steve or don't call me." This is just the beginning of the earthquake I cannot set off. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking about Amenhotep IV, Akhenaten, and is there evidence of alien intervention or evidence that could show alien intervention? Now, I just said he changed his name, suddenly changed his name. It would have the equivalent impact of the president getting reelected and stepping up to the mic and saying, "Okay, now that I'm reelected, call me Steve. I don't want to be called Barack Obama anymore. Call me Steve." And then he announces, he begins to make it known that he worships only one God. Now, in our current culture, that's no big deal. In their culture, it's a huge deal. Huge deal. Because there's a bunch of gods that are about to be offended here. Gods that these people have been taught are powerful and are to be honored. And if you don't honor them, it affects everything, even the afterlife. And so he says, "No, I don't believe that." it would be equivalent. You know, there was a big debate among some folks as to whether Barack Obama is Muslim or Christian. Now, he says he's Christian. But, okay, but what if he were to step to the microphone and say, by the way, while you're calling me Steve, I want to tell you something. I don't believe in Allah, and I don't believe in Jesus, and I don't believe in Jehovah. There's only one God, and his name is Mac. Everybody in the world would be sure by this time the president's cracking up. Everybody in the world would be shaken by this. Everybody in the United States would be shaken by this. Muslims would be offended. Christians would be offended. Jews would be offended. And he says, no, it's Mac. Only Mac. Now, this is 4 years into his reign. And then he said, and you know what? I don't like the capital. I'm going to go find a place for a new capital. So he's out and searching for a place for a new capital. And remember, Amenhotep, who is now Akhenaten, same guy, just changed his name, he believes in only one God. It is the God of all the energy of the universe, symbolized by the sun. And he sees the sun setting in a notch in the top of a mountain range. And he says, that's my signal from Aten. In that direction, over those mountains, that's where the capital is going to be. So he sets off 200 miles, 250 miles, something like that, out into the desert, and he builds a new capital. So what if President Obama stands at the microphone and says, okay, now I want you to call me Steve. I don't believe in Allah. I don't believe in Jehovah. I don't believe in Jesus. I believe in Mac. And Mac has shown me where to build the new capital. I'm going to build a new capital. I'm moving out of Washington, D.C. I'm going to move out into the desert just past Pahrump, Nevada. And that's where I'm going to build the capital, out in the desert. So he moves out there and builds a brand new city. In the case of Akhenaten, that city is known to us today as Amarna. And now by this time, if the president did all of this stuff, the whole world, I mean, the economic system of the world would be in shambles. Stock markets everywhere would be falling. So then, Akhenaten does something else. In Egypt, there's artwork everywhere. It is an established form of art. The pharaohs are always shown with a likeness of their face that, you know, it looks like them, but their bodies are always big and strong and muscular, and they've always got one foot forward, leading the people, you see. Akhenaten didn't like that stylized stuff. He said, you know what, that's not real. I want the artwork to show people as they really are. And that's how we got statues of Akhenaten that show him in what we would say is a rather sort of deformed body for a man. That's not a bad body for a woman, but that's kind of a deformed body for a man. That's how we got that art, because Akhenaten ordered that the old traditional styles of art were not to be used, that people were to be shown as they really are, including the royal family. And he is not only the first monarch in history to become a monotheist, not only that, he's the first monarch in history that we know of to invite the artist to paint the royal family, carve the royal family, to depict the royal family doing family things, playing with the kids, eating meals. He's the first. It was a shock to the system of the Egyptians. Now imagine, we've been using President Obama because he's the current president. And I'm not picking on President Obama. If it was anybody else, I would be using whoever it is. Okay, now, so let's go back to the president of the United States. He stepped to the microphone. He said, all right, now you call me Steve from now on. And by the way, there's only one God, and it's Mac. And I'm moving the capital away from Washington, D.C., and I'm going to move the capital out in the desert just past Pahrump, Nevada. Now, on this art thing, because of our modern technology, let's say the president said, so what we're going to do in the new palace or the new White House out in the desert, we're going to have webcams installed everywhere in every room. And you can just watch the first family as we go about our business every day, okay? That would have the same impact on us that what Akhenaten did with art had on his people. It was shocking, absolutely shocking. They didn't. The idea that we can see the Pharaoh playing with his children, we can see the queen playing with her children. I mean, this is unbelievable. And he upset the social order. Upset the social order big time. One of the biggest industries in Egypt was their religion. There were literally hundreds of thousands of people involved in the industry of religion, making little figures of gods, making amulets that had to do with some part of their religion, providing the bakery services for the temples, providing the wine for the temples, you know, all those farmers growing grapes and all those bakers baking bread and all those farmers growing the wheat. You know, it was big, big, big business. So he stopped. All the previous pharaohs had been sending loads of money and loads of provisions that they paid for, food and wine, to the big temples, and particularly at Thebes, and supporting this industry. Big, big infusion of cash from the pharaohs that supported this industry, which, of course, the trickle-down effect is that all the people who actually produced those goods had jobs and made money, and they were doing all right. Then you've got all of the priests, and you've got all the scribes. You've got all the people involved in the actual religious stuff. You got the upkeep of the temple and the people who do the carvings on the temple and the construction of the temples. And he said, no more. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, deep sympathy for whatever kept you away from the first hour. We are talking about Amenhotep IV, better known as Akhenaten. And we're talking about the theory that there has been extraterrestrial intervention, extraterrestrial interaction with humans in the past. It is a theory, and we're looking at this particular person, Akhenaten, and we're looking at his family, the circumstances around him, and the things he did to see if there's any evidence that there was perhaps some extraterrestrial intervention here. Well, as we went to break, I was telling you that the next thing that Akhenaten did was upset the social order, because he stopped sending all of that big pile of money and provisions to the temple at Thebes. So they were used to getting thousands of gallons of wine. They were used to getting thousands of loaves of bread. They were used to getting all kinds of food to use at the celebrations and so on. That stopped. They were used to getting that from the Pharaoh. That had been going on for hundreds of years. That stopped. And it was the only pharaonic support financially for any religion was for the worship of Aten. So we've been using President Obama as an example to try and understand how, what kind of shock this would be to our system. So now, if President Obama followed the same pattern as Akhenaten, he would step to the microphone. This is just an example. He would say, "Don't call me Barack Obama anymore. My name is now to be called, I'm to be called Steve. I don't believe in Allah. I don't believe in Jehovah. I don't believe in Jesus Christ. There is one God, and he is Mac. I'm moving the capital from Washington, D.C., out into the desert just beyond Pahrump, Nevada." And he goes out there and builds a new capital city. He changes all of our notions about the high position of president by installing webcams in every room of the presidential family living quarters. And you can just watch them on the internet go about their daily business. And so everybody's familiar now. And then, because he has chosen to say that there's only one God and he is Mac, he cuts all subsidies for anything religious. Now, you might say, well, that would be all right. I don't think we ought to subsidize religion. Okay, but there are people who think we should, and we do. So he gets rid of all of the tax exemptions for religious organizations, except for temples of Mac. At this point, if he made it that far, at this point, a president who did things like that would be finished. There would be an impeachment tomorrow. Well, that was Akhenaten. That's what he did. That's the stuff he did. It shook the ground under the world's superpower. I mean, it shook Egypt like it had never been shaken. So you would think maybe there would be some assassination attempts, but he ruled for a total of 17 years. He had 17 years to shake up Egypt. During that time, he did lose a few of the vassal states along the fringes of the Egyptian Empire. He lost those to the Hittites. But he did maintain control over the core of the Egyptian Empire, and he didn't lose that. What does all of this have to do, any of this have to do with extraterrestrials? I said, okay, we're going to look at some evidence, and we're going to ask the question, is this possibly evidence of extraterrestrial intervention or interaction with humans? So I'm going to show you some more evidence. I'll describe it for those of you who are on radio. I want to go back to the comparison between Amenhotep III and Amenhotep IV, Akhenaten. They don't look anything alike. Nothing. And there's a pretty good suggestion, fairly reasonable theory, that Amenhotep III may have looked at Akhenaten and said, "I don't know whose kid you are, but you're not mine." Now, he didn't get rid of Queen T. He didn't shake up the royal family, and he didn't shake up Egypt with a scandal. But he apparently did shove this kid to the side, and the rest of the royal kids got all the goodies. But this is the one who grew up to be Pharaoh. This is the one who grew up to be in charge, the absolute ruler of Egypt. He has a very elongated face. His father has a very rounded face. He has a very elongated, sharp nose. His father has kind of a bulbous nose. He's got a very sharp chin, very angular face with a sharp chin. His father has a broad chin and a full, round face. They don't look alike. So if the theory is correct, if the theory that's out there that Amenhotep III surmised that Amenhotep IV was not really Junior, was not really his, if that was his belief, if that was his assumption, then he would have shoved this kid to the side, and apparently that is what happened. Now, there are carvings. Remember when Amenhotep IV changed his name to Akhenaten, and then he began to change everything in the kingdom, including art. He declared that the artists were to show exactly how people look. Don't dress it up. Don't stylize it. Don't make them look different than they are. Show us like we really are. And in one of the wall carvings, we can see the hand of Akhenaten, the right hand. And this right hand, he's got very long fingers. In fact, in all of the carvings, it shows very long fingers. This one's very clear, very close up, and we can see that not only are his fingers very long, his fingers are not shaped the same as the rest of the human family. Very long and not shaped the same. Okay, that's circumstantial, I grant you. It is circumstantial because I think what you can see is where I am headed here is that is there a possibility that Akhenaten was a hybrid? Is there a possibility that while Queen T is his mother, that perhaps he had been implanted in her? Perhaps he was a hybrid, part human and part not. Is that possible? Well, is there any indication of it? Well, I think the indications are pretty clear. The indications are, just take a look at him. He's not like the rest of the human family. And he's not like his dad. Now, a kid growing up can be shaped by what happens, and is shaped by what happens in his childhood. A kid growing up, if you just mistreat this kid and abuse this kid, that's going to be a human with problems for the rest of their life. But it's also true there are children who are born that are, by the standards of the rest of society, very strange. I don't mean just in their appearance. I mean they think differently. They think about different things. I saw on YouTube the other day a video of a kid that's 12 years old, and I think he's working on a PhD now in physics. And everybody, all the doctors of physics, are just blown away by this kid. He doesn't think like everybody else. Now, he looks like all the other kids, but he doesn't think like all the other kids his age. So there are children who are born that don't think like the rest of us. And I think perhaps we can say there are children who are born who can think unlike the rest of us. The rest of us have to work at thinking. Now, these kids are born just thinking, maybe, just maybe, Akhenaten was such a child. Maybe these strange ideas were with him all the way through his childhood. Maybe he was not entirely from here. His mother was Queen T. She did give birth to him. But was his father Amenhotep III? There seems to be evidence that that may not be the case. Well, if you got enough money, if you're rich enough, you can look like anything and still marry a beautiful woman, and he did. Now, there are people who are saying, Akhenaten, who is Akhenaten? I was talking to the producer today of this show, and I said, I'm going to be talking about Akhenaten tonight. He had no idea who Akhenaten was. But the instant I mentioned Nefertiti, everybody knows Nefertiti, right? One of the most beautiful women in the history of this planet. Absolutely a gorgeous woman. Well, that was his wife. You know, there's a strange thing about his wife. You know, royal weddings tend to be well documented, even back then. So you have the name of the bride. You know who the parents of the bride are. You know where they're from. If they are nobility, you know that. If they are kings and queens somewhere, you know that. We don't know. We don't know about Nefertiti. One theory says perhaps she was a princess from a foreign country. Another theory holds that she was somehow related. She was in the family somehow of Akhenaten. We don't know. There's not anything recorded that tells us. We don't know where she came from. Absolutely a gorgeous woman. And Akhenaten is, you look at his face, he's not a bad-looking guy. But that body just doesn't fit on a man. But, if that guy who's got pretty much a feminine body has enough money, it doesn't matter. You've seen it? How many times have you seen it? How many times have you seen an absolutely gorgeous woman hanging around some rich, really ugly dude? It happens. It happened here. But this is part of the Akhenaten royal family. They had six daughters. I couldn't find pictures of all six. They had six daughters. We see in this picture Nefertiti. Then we see Akhenaten. And then we see four of the daughters. I want you to notice that on three of those daughters, we can clearly see, three of those pictures, we clearly see they had a very elongated skull. Oh, how do you suppose that happened? We don't know about Nefertiti because all of the carvings and all the sculptures of her show her with the queenly royal headdress on. So we don't know. We do know about Akhenaten because they have found his skull. I'll show that in a moment. And he had this elongated head. The daughters had it. That's not what his dad had. He didn't get that from dad. He didn't get it from mom. Now, I read a report today where a scientist was describing this and saying, or a doctor was describing it, and he's saying, well, you know, you can have this condition, and he named it, and it causes the head to elongate that way because it, the seams fuse at an early age, and it causes the head to elongate. Okay, in Akhenaten. How about in six daughters? How about in one son? We're not even sure who Tutankhamun's mother is, but DNA shows he's Akhenaten's son. He had the elongated skull. So, where did that come from? Now, when standard academicians, there we go, when the standard smart guys talk about this, they say, they'll just kind of pass it off and say, yeah, there was a period of time in there where not really sure what the deal was, but they kind of had those elongated skulls, and then they just move on. Okay, I understand. We don't really understand how they got those elongated skulls. What I'm saying is the elongated skulls are there, and they are evidence of something. Get my point? The fact that the elongated skulls are there in that family is evidence. There they are. It's evidence of something. What is it evidence of? Did all of them have this disorder that the doctor talked about? All of the children? As I said, we don't know about Nefertiti. We don't know where she came from. We don't know who her parents were. There are theories, but they are only theories. There's nothing definite. And we don't know if she had an elongated skull. But I will tell you this, and I wish I had put the picture in the mix. As she got older, the artist depicted her, and she had a bulbous body, very, very similar to Akhenaten. Their body shape was very similar. Absolutely gorgeous face. But as she got a little bit older, and she didn't get very old, she died young. As she got a little bit older, they started showing that she had a bulbous body like Akhenaten. Is it possible that they were both hybrids? We know he had an elongated skull. We don't know for sure about her, but the daughters had it. Tutankhamun had it. Now, apparently Tutankhamun is not the son of Nefertiti. Some people think that his mother was a secondary wife by the name of Kia. Some people think Tutankhamun was the son of one of these daughters, the one with the headdress up there that's facing us, not the one turned to the side, the one facing us. Her name is Meritana, or something like that. Meritaten, that's it, Meritaten. She, apparently, after Nefertiti died, married her father. And, you know, in our culture today, we kind of go, oh, my God. Well, yeah, but that was the way it was done. And, look, royalty today keeps it in the family normally. They marry cousins, you know. They keep it in the family. Abraham, the guy who is the father of both the Arab nations and the Jewish nation, the Israelites, was married to his half-sister. So this is not all that unusual for royalty. And he was married to his daughter, Akhenaten was married to his daughter, Meritaten. So some people think that is where King Tut came from, Tutankhamun. Anyway, we don't know that. It's just speculation. What we do know is that all the kids apparently had these elongated skulls. All right. got the wrong picture up. There we go. All the kids had these elongated skulls. Now, we're going to do a little comparison here with Akhenaten and one of his daughters. What we're looking at on the screen is the skull of Akhenaten. There are two shots here. One sort of looking from the front, and we can see that that's an elongated skull to the back. Then we're looking at a black and white shot from the side, and we can see that that skull extends far to the back. And then we have a bust of one of his daughters, and, well, there you go. A very pronounced elongated skull. I find it difficult, although it's possible, I find it difficult to buy the idea that this was some sort of a disease or disorder that Akhenaten had that caused his skull to be elongated. I think it's probably genetic. It's not a disease or not just a deformity. Because his kids had it. So I think it's probably genetic. When you look at the evidence, and like I said, the academics sort of pass that off, and they just say, well, we don't really know. It's kind of a weird thing, you know, they had these kind of weird heads, but at one period there in Egypt, but then, you know, just an anomaly. And they just sort of pass it off. I'm saying that's evidence. It's there, so it's evidence of something. What is it evidence of? Well, I think it's evidence of genetics. Because all of his kids had it. Look, I've had the flu. None of my children were born with the flu. That's a disease, okay? That's a disease. But genetics are passed down from parents to children. I think we can pretty clearly see that Amenhotep III probably didn't pass any genetics on to Amenhotep IV. You look at their pictures side by side, pretty clear to see. It doesn't look like there's a genetic link there. So then the question becomes, who is the father of Amenhotep IV? Whoever that father is contributed the genetics that caused these elongated skulls. You might say, and I heard this said, well, Akhenaten doesn't appear to look like his father, but that doesn't mean that he was not his son. If these elongated skulls are genetic, I think it does point that direction that he's not the son of Amenhotep III. Here's why. Amenhotep III had other children. They didn't have elongated skulls. So if he's passing that genetic trait on to his children, why didn't they have elongated skulls? They didn't. Just that one. Now that one, Amenhotep IV, pass that on to every one of his children. Who's your daddy now? We'll be back. It's beginning to sort of come together, isn't it? You see what I'm looking at, don't you? If the father of the clan, Amenhotep III, does not have this cone head, his wife doesn't have it. And we know that because we've got their pictures. We've got their mummies. The father doesn't have a cone head. The mother doesn't have a cone head. None of their children do, except one. And this one passes that on to every single one of his children. It sort of indicates part of his genetics are not from Amenhotep III. It's a genetic thing. He's passing it on to his children. His daughters have these cone heads. And not only do his daughters have these cone heads, his son, Tutankhamun, King Tut, has the elongated skull as well. He's passing this on to all of his kids. It's a genetic thing. If it's a genetic thing, it suggests the possibility that, number one, Queen Ti, who is the mother of Akhenaten, maybe had a fling, a one-night stand, with a servant who happened to have a cone head. That's probably not very likely. There's also the possibility that Queen Ti may have been an abductee. There's the possibility that Queen Ti may have had a pregnancy implanted in her, as so many abductee females talk about. But instead of having this one removed, they let this one be born. Possible. Now look, I said at the outset of this, this is what the mainstream academia would say is fringe, it's nuts, there's nothing to support it. I say there is something to support it. Religionists would say it's heretical. Yes, it is. It's outside the circle they've drawn. It is an alternative theory, yes. But we have evidence. We have actual evidence of this. When I say we have evidence of this, I'm talking about we have evidence of these elongated skulls in this one family. We have actual evidence of it. Now, it's there. What is it evidence of? And I think that the alien intervention theory is just as solid a speculation, just as solid a theory as any other theory. To say that he had this disorder and that disorder, and that's what caused him to have the female body. I read all that today. That's what caused him to have the female-like shape. He definitely was a male. He fathered children. But that's what caused him to have this sort of female-like shape. Well, okay. And then he had this elongated skull. Well, that was caused by a disorder called thus and such. And when that happens, you know, then the skulls elongate and so forth. He passed it on to all of his kids. These are not diseases. These are not just disorders. This is genetic. And he's the only one in his family to have it. His brother didn't have it. His sisters didn't have it. Mom and dad didn't have it. He's the only one. So I think it's a genetic thing, and the possibility exists. Possibility. That Queen T may have been an abductee. Maybe she was implanted with this hybrid child. When this child is born, Amenhotep III notices there's something not the same about this kid. As he grows a little bit, obviously that elongated head would be showing. Obviously those angular features would be showing. As he grew more, that feminine body shape would begin to show. Amenhotep III kind of sat back, in my opinion, and said, I don't know about this. That's not my kid. And he shoves him to the side. As I described in the first hour, he shoves him to the side. This kid gets none of the goodies of the royal children. None of the big titles. He's not in any of the family portraits. He's not in the family statuary. I think Amenhotep III recognized, that's not my kid. And I think us today, looking at that evidence that is available, it's almost the same as Amenhotep III looking at that kid. And I think we can come to the same conclusion reasonably. Now, you may not. Maybe you don't come to that conclusion, and I'm not saying that you should. I'm saying it is a theory for which there is some evidence. And we can come to the same conclusion that Amenhotep III came to, and that is, that's not my kid. So whose kid is he? Whosever he is, passed on this genetics that provides the very long, long fingers and shaped differently than other humans, passed on that very long angular face, passed on genetically that feminine shape to the body, genetically passed on the elongated skull. And perhaps there were times in his life as he was growing up when he was schooled by these extraterrestrials. Is there any evidence for that? Is there any evidence to suggest that that could have happened? As a matter of fact, there is, all over Egypt. In the various artwork that is carved into the various walls and tablets around Egypt, we do see artwork that looks very extraterrestrial. We see in Egyptian writing, those who are looking at their television now or looking at their computer screen can see that in the upper left-hand corner, that's just a small segment of a big tablet that has a lot of Egyptian hieroglyphs on it, but you can see two things in that tablet, in that writing, that look like, today we would say, flying saucers. Doesn't look sort of like it. It looks like it. In the lower left-hand corner, there is a picture of a painting on a wall, and there's a little white box around a section, and then that white box is blown up right next to it. And ladies and gentlemen, that is a gray. That is a gray. Doesn't look like a gray. It's a gray. In the picture right next to it, to the right, we see it's both a painting and a carving. It's a carving into a wall that has been painted. And what we see is a guy, perhaps a priest, standing next to and apparently dealing with or talking to a gray. Now, if you're having trouble seeing that, make your player full screen and you can see it. In the background, this is a carving from Amarna. And this carving shows King Atenaten, Pharaoh Atenaten, Akhenaten, and Nefertiti. Each of them is holding a daughter. And we have the Aten symbol, the sun, with its rays coming down upon the king and the queen and their children. There is a theory You know, Moses had the burning bush. There is a theory that Akhenaten saw a glowing disc in the sky, had an encounter with the occupants, and was given this information about Aten, all the energy of the universe, symbolized by the sun, only one God. You don't need all these other gods. There's only this one. It's a theory, granted. But it fits with the other evidence in this theory, doesn't it? Where did he get the idea that there's only one God? Where he wasn't raised that way. No one in Egypt believed that. It wasn't being taught anywhere. Not in his life. So where did Akhenaten get the idea that there's only this one God, and it's the Aten? All the energy of the universe symbolized by the glowing disc in the sky. Where did he get this idea? Nobody, absolutely nobody in the history of Egypt had written anything like that, thought that way, taught that way. He had never been exposed to it. The presence of that idea suggests the possibility that he had an encounter with a glowing disc, and the occupants of that disc gave him that information. It's a possibility. It's a possibility that is evidenced by the many symbols, paintings, carvings around Egypt that show something very extraterrestrial. There seems to be no doubt that the Egyptian people, the ancient Egyptian people, had contact with beings that were not from this world. Look, I know that in the UFO community there are people that make this distinction between extraterrestrials and EBs. I understand that. But folks, extraterrestrial means not from this planet. That's all it means. If you make it mean something else, you're inventing. Extra means apart from. Terrestrial, apart from Earth. That's all it means. It doesn't mean there's a distinction between extraterrestrials and EBs. If you want to make that distinction, you can make that distinction, but the words don't mean that. Extraterrestrial simply means it's not from this planet. This planet's name in Latin is Terra, extra Terra, apart from Earth. That's all it means. So some of these look like grays. And, you know, some of these gods that were drawn, you know, they're half man, half bird, half man, half reptile, half man, half something else. Some of the gods. It's possible, isn't it, that they were extraterrestrials and the people were drawing what they saw? Possible. It's possible they made it up. But it's also possible they were drawing what they saw. But whenever you look at the pictures that I put up here just a moment ago, I'll put them back up again. We're looking at carvings of what we call a gray. It doesn't just kind of maybe sort of look like it. That's what it is. We'll be back right after this. Okay, let me kind of draw this together. I think you've seen, and those of you listening by radio, which is the vast majority of our audience, I think you've seen, at least mentally as I've described it for you, the evidence does suggest the possibility, and I think fairly strongly suggests the possibility of extraterrestrial intervention here. It doesn't prove it. It does. The evidence that I've presented tonight does prove this was one very strange pharaoh when compared to all other pharaohs, all of them before him and after him. This one sticks out like a sore thumb. He was so different that he shook the world's only superpower at the time. It was the superpower on the planet at the time. And he was so different and so radically different that he shook that superpower. There was economic impact as a result of this. You know, part of his policy was very different as well. Now, he ruled, we know from records, things that he wrote, he ruled as Pharaoh. He sent orders. He expected those orders to be carried out. In one case, he really jumps on one particular vassal king, and he says, you know, either you're being disloyal to me, or you're lying to me, or maybe it's both, because I know you're lying. And he gives him the reasons why he knows he's lying and orders him to come to Egypt to see the king. When the guy comes to Egypt to see the king, Akhenaten imprisons him for about a year. He lets him go back to his little vassal kingdom out at the fringes after a year. And when the Hittites show up to start attacking Egypt, he throws in with the Hittites, proving that Akhenaten was right. So we know that he was engaged in the, you know, there are people that say, well, Akhenaten just sort of let the diplomacy and the internal affairs of Egypt kind of go to hell in a handbasket. Well, they went to hell in a handbasket, but we also know that he was engaged. He was not, you know, just in la-la land. He was engaged. He had a whole different approach, a whole different philosophy. For instance, as the Hittites began to attack these vassal states at the fringes of the Egyptian Empire, these are, when I say vassal states, they had their own kings and they had their own government, but they had to pay tribute to Egypt. And as the Hittites began to attack those, Akhenaten, unlike other pharaohs, was not willing to commit the Egyptian army, lives, and resources to the protection of those vassal states. Now, the actual boundaries of the Egyptian Empire, the parts that were actually Egyptian territory, yes, he defended. And in fact, in the 12th year of his reign, led a campaign. But these outlying suburbs of Egypt, if you will, his attitude towards that was, they don't really contribute that much to the safety, security, and economy of Egypt. I'm not going to commit our resources to go fight the Hittites. If they really want those territories, they can have them. I'm not going in there with army. Now, that's very, very different from pharaohs before him and after. He was radically different. He looked radically different. He thought radically different. He spoke radically different. I think there are indications, strong indications, that suggest that there really is a possibility he was not entirely human. I think there is enough there to at least make us raise an eyebrow and say, it's possible. it's possible. There's evidence here. What is it evidence of? Now, the academics want to pass it off as just kind of a blip, an anomaly. Well, it was a huge blip. If it was an anomaly, it was a huge anomaly. It shook Egypt to its core. Internally, the economy of Egypt under him began to crash. He was so radically different that nothing seemed to work because everything worked according to traditional order. And when he upset that order, he upset the economy that went with it. In addition, you have the genetic factors. In addition to that, you have evidence from all over Egypt that there was contact with beings that were not from here. So when you put it all together and you sum it all, you put it in the bag, you shake it all up and pour it out, you sum it up, I think there is evidence of extraterrestrial intervention here. It is a theory. It's only a theory. It's what the academics would call fringe, nutty. It's what the religionists would call heresy. Nevertheless, the evidence is there. And it's evidence they can't explain adequately and have not done so. So I think an adequate explanation that fits would be the ancient astronaut theory. It seems to fit. In this audience, there are people who will listen to this, they'll look at this, and they'll say, that's crazy. There are other people that will look at it and say, aha, I knew there was something about that guy. That's the way it goes. It's just a theory. But it's one I think has some pretty good supportive evidence. Well, I hope tonight you have enjoyed looking into the life and family of Akhenaten. And I hope you see that there are reasonable, rational, logical reasons why people sometimes adopt a theory that's considered to be fringe. I don't consider it to be fringe. It is alternative. It's an alternative to all of the stuff the academics have told us that doesn't fit, and we can see it doesn't fit. It is an alternative. There may be yet more alternative theories that would fit, and I am open to them. Well, that's it for this evening. That's a wrap. Akhenaten has been exposed, and I think pretty well exposed as possibly not from this planet, or possibly a hybrid. Don't forget, if you are not a member, you need to be a member. Then you can see all the stuff the rest have been looking at, because you'll be able to watch the show. If you have not subscribed to the K-Files, our free weekly newsletter, be sure you do, because there's always good information in there, and it's free. There's no reason for you not to subscribe, okay? The newsletter is free, but to be a member and be able to watch the show every night, plus get all the other goodies that go with it, that's 23 cents a day. 23 cents a day. I know it's asking a lot, but come on. You can give up a cup of coffee, two cups of coffee, that pays for the month. $6.95 a month. We want you to join, but you'll be glad you did, because you'll be in a community of people who are very like-minded. People who are interested in the things you're interested in. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.